Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of Three Techies Banter. But you'll hear more about this later on the episode. Let's get right into today's episode.
Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter.
Hi, everyone. This is Sheetal. Welcome to 3TB. It's a podcast where we three techies banter. Well, I'm not really a techie in the technical sense, but yeah, that's where we three techies banter. It's a podcast where you can explore tech in the non-tech way. It's about how tech and the economics behind the tech impact us today and in the future. It's full of information, fun facts, common sense, and is spoken in a language that everybody can understand. And like I said, because we talk about the economics of things, last time we spoke about AI and we talked about the difference between AI and generative AI and things like that. This time we thought we'd bring you a very, very interesting aspect of AI, and that's called the economics of AI. So let's understand what happens behind the scenes. What is it that it costs for us to use ChatGPT 4, for example, and what will it mean for companies if they want to implement AI? So let's talk about the behind the scenes and the economics of AI, and then we will talk about the costs of AI. So Samiran, any thoughts on the economics of AI?
So yeah, that's been a very interesting ride. And, you know, if you look beyond, I mean, like about in a 50-year time span, you know, it's kind of been through, gone through so many highs and lows that people, if it's doing well, people feel it'll get bad. And if it's doing badly, people say, you know, the good times are ahead and all that. And there have been there's been a lot of theory around, you know, what's going on. In fact, it's been so funny that people, I mean, there have been cases where people there who have started their PhD in some area of AI, and by the time they reached the third year, people said AI is dead. So then they had to change their subject and stuff like that. So it was like pretty weird. Because AI has suddenly become so mainstream because of the fact that, you know, we are interacting with it. So people are wondering, you know, is this time, is it real this time? Is there a problem? Second issue is typically, you know, if, you know, we've always been talking about these autonomous vehicles, you know, typically what happens with that is that it has a really long tail, which means that there are so many exceptions to handle that, you know, you're not able to build a solution that addresses it. And I'll kind of talk about this AI mediocrity spiral thing also, you know, it just doesn't work. Then, of course, there's the hardware. And number four is really the fact that the human brain is really just very, very good. And, you know, enough studies have shown that, you know, AI is not even as good as a six-year-old. We've not even been able to train LLM models equal to, you know, two-year-olds. You know, in fact, we're behind by a factor of 30, literally. So, you know, so therefore, the question really is that, is it real this time, or is it again something faddish which will disappear and we'll have another winter? What people are at least saying, and we kind of need to go with what they believe, is the fact that this time around, because the markets that are being addressed are significantly larger. Just taking the example of whether Bard, ChatGPT, Anthropic, what have you. Because it's talking about image creation, video creation, it is typically talking about industries which are very large. The gaming industry, about $300 billion. The entertainment industry, which is like, you know, $3 to $6 trillion, depending on who you ask. So the market sizes are very large. In this case, we are, you know, very strangely enough, this time around, AI is not expected to be accurate because it is creative. You know, you ask AI about a fictional story and, you know, it comes up with something. You know, it can be anything. Now, if the character has four fingers, do you really care? You know, it's fiction, you know. So the need to be accurate is lower. So, you know, that is probably something that will stick. And there is, you know, there is a whole bunch of other things which is kind of leading to it. Typically, just the economics of the fact that, you know, the cost it takes to generate an image was by an artist, which could be in the hundreds of dollars for an hour, to AI, which is like very cheap. Same with creativity and other things. So net of it, I feel that, you know, this time with the generative AI piece, I think it is a trend which is probably going to be a little more sustainable and could lead to much better things. I mean, that's the sense I get now.
Initially, you know, that AI playing a grandmaster of chess and all was great, but it was not solving any problems. Now that it is kind of getting mainstream, here to stay, we need to look at a couple of axes in terms of macroeconomic view, right? And an IMF study that I saw was quite interesting. So if AI is here to stay, then it essentially needs to address, in my mind, three axes, right? The way that study proposed it. One is productivity growth, right? So productivity is simply, you know, the cost of output per unit of input, right? And if the cost of output keeps going down, you are having a higher productivity for the same amount of input, right? So the productivity growth is one axis. Second axis was income, right? And if you look at countries around the world, there is income inequality in some areas, which is way more pronounced than the other areas. And the third axis is really the industrial concentration, right? In last 2 decades, if you look at it, GAFAM is like, you know, their market cap is probably 50% of the total market itself, right? Which is humongous. So there has been huge amount of industrial concentration. So we need to look at what will AI do on these three axes. And let me, since I mentioned GAFAM and the concentration, let me start with the industrial concentration, right? A classic example there would be that, you know, today, you know, Sheetal was also mentioning this, that, you know, the cost of training ChatGPT was 100 million and cost of running ChatGPT is $700,000 per day. Now, these kind of costs clearly tell you that it is not a small player or a small company who can ever afford to train such a large model and keep it up and running, right? So in my mind, I see a future where industrial concentration is going to increase, and it's a virtuous cycle, but it's a vicious circle, because the bigger they get, they'll have larger models they can afford to train. And hence, completely keeping the small guy out of this whole AI growth that is happening.
So the funniest thing I found was this whole Sam Altman saga. And I kind of hate to kind of correlate that with AI. But just the fact that it almost seems that the destiny of the human race is hinging on Sam Altman remaining CEO versus... So that to me was like really crazy. And if more than anything else, it felt like, you know, there should at least be 100 open AIs for this to really work, to coming back to that whole decentralization. But just that the economics, I mean, where are you going to generate 10 billion into 100 for giving 100 more startups away? So which is, it's kind of a really weird, I mean, I don't know how this industry will pivot to kind of make this more efficient. But on the one hand, obviously, there is a fantastic use case for growing this, because by the nature of the fact that it is generative, the fact that it is by its nature imprecise, and they are solving a problem by software. So, this whole long tail problem, typically what happens is, you have a situation, then you get an investor in, and the investor says that, you know, we want you to grow, so you hire more people. And, you know, then the growth doesn't kick off, because then you become a people business as opposed to a software business, you know, so which is kind of the...
But Samiran, so I agree with Nilesh, because it is going to become a concentration. Think about it, OpenAI, right, which was supposed to take on a Bard and as a company, right, and did that, but got bought out by one of the big guys, right? So what is going to... And that's my challenge in this entire space, right? Every startup who does something good or is trying to become a challenger brand to a larger brand, typical archetypal brands, right? So OpenAI was a challenger brand to Bard, which is Google, which is an archetypal large brand. The the David versus Goliath story just doesn't exist because another one comes and buys it out, and then now it's back to Goliath versus Goliath kind of a scene, right? So you're never going to land up in a situation where truly you are going to have, decentralization, if I may use your words, in that sense. It'll always become.
But then isn't that typical of, isn't that typical of all industries? We've discussed this about this whole OTT industry. Very soon, everything is going to just be bought out. I don't know what the answer to that is, but this is a...
No, but think about it slightly differently. And that's where I differ with you when I think of the OTT industry, right? Yes, you have two large giants, even in an Indian context, which is your three, let's call the three international, the large giants, right? Which is Netflix, Amazon Prime and Disney Hotstar. But there is a whole bunch of regional players who exist and are making a difference, whether it is Z5, Sony Live, Hoi Choi, whatever, right? I don't see that happening when it comes to AI. And I think it's only because of the economics of doing something like this, that the funding will always come from the big guys, and therefore instead of a Goliath, David versus Goliath, it's a Goliath versus Goliath story. And that's my challenge. So on that one parameter, I think I'm more in line with what Nilesh is saying, which is that we are not going to land up with a lot of startups doing things until and unless, of course, there is a complete paradigm shift, which I'm currently not seeing.
So, for taking this argument a bit further, of industrial concentration, the other thing I see is that these large language models are working on something called indexable web, right? And the interesting fact is indexable web in public domain is 4% of the web. What it means is that already data is in walled gardens of these large enterprises. Mm-hmm. So the problem that we are facing is, right, the pile which is available for training your models is just 4%. It's a large pile, but it's just 4%, which means I don't know how well trained your models might be. But if you go to Google or Amazon, especially Amazon, right, with our shopping behaviors and all, it has a huge amount of data which is accessible only to Amazon. So I think industrial concentration, couple of reasons, data, access to huge amount of data. Second, deep pockets to really buy hardware and train models. So on the industrial concentration somehow, and like you said, if a new kid on the block does something absolutely fantastic in AI world, most probably they'll just buy, right? Build versus buy has always been there. And if you have deep pockets, you buy. So I have a feeling industrial concentration is not going to go away. I don't know if there is any, at least on that, I don't have a future which looks very positive in terms of no concentration.
So to the point on this, I think the general, I don't know if that's the general thinking, but I think what people are expecting is that ultimately, everything really kicks off when enterprises step in, because till now it's still a consumer product, and of course it's trained the way it is. But in the future, the expectation is, or may be, that large enterprises within industry clusters or for themselves will start building their own LLMs for their own data, because today no enterprise is giving their data, because suddenly, what if anything, people have realized my data is so precious, I'm not going to give it at all. And number two, of course, there is a whole data leaks, blah, blah, blah. So one is, of course, that we discover some super cool technology that brings training cross crashing down, some super chip that, brings everything down. The other, I think, could be that companies or clusters of companies will start building their own optimized and efficient models that serves their piece of work, as opposed to a generalized model that serves everybody, which obviously has its own resource constraints. So, that is another place where, direction where this could go. And obviously, transformer models and generative AI is not the only place. There could be n number of other things that happen in the AI world. But at least here, I think enterprises may step in, because I heard this interview with the CEO of Databricks, and he said that if nothing else, what the generative AI revolution has done is that now CEOs want to talk to me as opposed to CIOs, because I used to never get an appointment with CEOs, because it used to be, that analytics guy, go and talk to my CIO. But because it is kind of the agenda has shifted, maybe, something interesting will happen in the enterprise space.
Join industry leaders for an exciting event unlike any other at Parker Seminars Las Vegas 2024. Attendees will hear from renowned speakers including ultra-distance cycler David Goggins, leadership expert Simon Sinek, and an author of Battle for Your Brain, Nita Farahani, among others. We'll have 12 unique tracks to choose from, covering topics from beyond biohacking and chiropractic principles to clinical science and more. Go to parkerseminars.com and register today.
So, Samir, let's transition to the next one. And it's a nice, I think, the fact that you talked about enterprise, and I think that leads us into the cost bit of AI, because to my mind, large enterprises may still be able to afford to build their own models, right? But when you come to mid and small, that's a long, long way off, because the cost of building a reasonably good model is not small at all. So we'll transition into our next segment soon, guys, but we're going to take a short break here before we come back with the costs of AI. So Samiran, I think as far as industrial concentration is concerned, I think you are on one side of the fence and Nilesh and I seem to be more towards the concentration bit. But having said that, let's just quickly talk about the income inequalities that are likely to happen. And we've seen income inequalities happen, whether it's been any other revolution, right? So whether it's the industrial revolution or otherwise. We've seen a whole sense of income inequalities, and it's quite fascinating when you think about it from an AI perspective. One really kind of says, hey, are we going to get into higher inequality? Or are we going to get into lower inequality? And my sense is maybe there's a middle of the road. At least I'm sitting on the fence on this one, because at one level, we're saying that, a lot of people will get displaced, or they will have to go into lower end jobs, etc., or the lower end jobs will be, taken away by AI, and therefore they will be forced to move somewhere else, either into further lower end jobs, or they will improve their skills and go into higher end jobs. So I'm not quite sure where the future is headed, because at one point in time, I remember as a layperson who wasn't from the world of technology, one always felt that the creative fields, for example, would, everybody talked about how the human mind is very important and how low level jobs would be taken, but the higher end creative jobs, etc., would not get impacted. But what has happened with generative AI is all the creative jobs have gone into jeopardy, and not really the low level tasks, which were machine learning and robotics and all of that, which was supposed to happen. So I'm not quite sure clear what the, if I crystal gaze, I'm not quite sure what the future is. Though I do think, and I've spent some time recently in the hospital, so I do feel wherever people care is happening, that's something that will continue to hold true even in an AI world. But one doesn't really know. I don't know what the two of you think about it. I just personally think that I'm not sure. It could go either ways.
Yeah, on income inequality, I think I don't, like, unlike industrial concentration, where I truly believe the concentration will increase with AI, in income inequality, I'm also not completely convinced by the school of thought that inequality will increase. The proponents of that, or the people who talk about it, say that, essentially, if AI is doing all these jobs, right, then humans are reduced to jobs like, doormen or nannies, or so lower and low income jobs, which will not be taken over by AI. So hence, lower income jobs are more, so jobless will only find lower income jobs, and the higher income jobs will become even higher in income, because if you look at a normal software engineer versus an AI engineer or a data scientist, the pay disparity is very high. So in effect, inequality increases. At the same time, in my mind, I also think that maybe inequality decreases. Again, taking the same software coder example, that a software coder who has AI and is able to, you know, generate code faster might move up the value chain. And a very, very interesting analogy of that would be that if I had to pit human versus AI, I'll put another third player here, human with AI. So you have three players, human, AI, and human with AI. Mostly the prediction is human with AI will win. AI alone cannot win, human alone cannot win. Which means that if human with AI wins, then essentially your income inequality has to reduce, because quote unquote AI would be available for everyone. I mean, that has to be kind of a premise on which to build the income inequality hypothesis. But yeah, I think I'm not again, yeah.
So I've kind of discovered one paradox, which kind of thing. So in economics, right, there is this thing called the Devin's paradox, which occurs basically when technological progress or government policy increases the efficiency with which a certain resource is used, you know, human, whatever. But the falling cost of the use induces increase in demand enough that the resource the resource use increases rather than reduces. So what essentially it means is that while you're making things more efficient, which means that you will think that the resource usage will go down, but in actual practicality, it actually, you know, increases, because in a sense, it gets, I wouldn't say democratic, much more easily available. You know, I mean, you take, for example, you know, when we felt that, you know, you to design, when the mobile came, we said, now there's, you know, everything is over, you know, but, you know, the whole, how do you design a mobile on the screen is very different from how you design on the web. So, you know, that whole 2D HTML, blah, 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 this happened. Even in the creativity space, what we are at least seeing is the fact that while we are creating very quickly, but more people are creating. Take the stupid example of my case only. Earlier, somebody else was doing artwork. Now, you know, we do it, and now, you know, we say yes, no, and all. And so it's become more efficient, but at the same time, you know, more people are doing it. So it's a very difficult thing to say whether at a macro level people will lose their jobs. But I think efficiency seems to lead to more opportunity as opposed to less, as a kind of a thumb rule. And we kind of need to be optimistic about it, because I think everything about technology is about reaching the last mile, reaching it efficiently. Take AI aside, you take any technological intervention that we are doing. So, you know, if it is always going to lead, efficiency will lead to losses, then, you know, we would still be on the bullock cart. But, you know, that's not happened.
Just to summarize, I think on income inequality, I think all three of us seem to be on kind of the same page. We believe AI will not increase income inequality. So the doomsday is not here. Jobs are not going to go away. There are multiple, you know, economic theories plus the fact that people will become better.
And then there is Elon Musk, you know, once he takes us to Mars, there'll be two planets to work on. So, I mean, there's nothing to worry
about. more work. So efficiency, it seems, will lead to kind of, more consumption and hence more jobs. So we have a undivided house coming very quickly on the productivity aspect, you know, productivity growth. Will it be a higher productivity or a lower productivity due to AI? I'll quickly give my two bets. I think on this, I believe there will be productivity growth. The idea is that if the human with AI kind of a scenario that we have to look at these as tools and not as the solution in itself. It's a tool rather than solution. And if we look at it that way, then people who are using AI will churn out better and better output in lesser time. And a classic example, honestly, is the whole Midjourney thing, right? I mean, Samiran has been creating some, you know, fantastic artwork for our podcasts, and yeah, the quality has also gone up, and I think time has reduced. So I think productivity growth seems to be, you know, higher with AI.
So I think productivity also, this is again something I came across, that, you know, it's not enough for market transformation or adoption to take place. That piece of technology has to kind of literally be 10,000 times better than what is happening today for a market to transform. Otherwise, it's incremental. In fact, there was a case study about this robotaxi. So apparently, they've spent $75 billion on making that robotaxi automated and what have you. And what they discovered is that while it was giving some kind of a 10x improvement in terms of a hourly rate, the amount of power the car CPU used was about 1300 watts, as opposed to the brain of the Uber driver, which was 15 watts. And, you know, those economics just don't make sense. You know, unless you have a situation which is like our ChatGPT or a Midjourney situation, where the cost becomes fractional and the output is super, super fast. I mean, in a second, you get something which will take people at least a couple of hours. You know, it's true of, I think it's even true of legal briefs. It's true, of course, of creativity. So I think productivity is a driver, but I think the market will decide what is productive enough for it to be adopted. I mean, productivity is a given, but I think that, I mean, I was really stunned by the 10x versus 10,000x. You know, I thought 10x was great, but they said that market transformation happens at, you know, like factors of n as opposed to just the 10x.
So my sense on productivity is really on clarity, right? What is it in a business that really an intervention can increase productivity on? And like Samiran said, is that productivity enough, if I may use that word? So I think that the challenge today right now, and the challenge is that not enough people understand the impact and the understand and don't have a large enough understanding about AI to be able to clearly say that these are the areas on business. So I do another podcast, right? So I host another podcast, and I had somebody tell me something very interesting, saying that where do you need technology intervention, right? Is something that only business guys can know. They know where best it can do an intervention and where best it can help the business grow. But they need to focus on that. They don't need to focus on what technology to use. I think the challenge, the challenge that is going to happen is, how do you train people to understand which aspects of the business should you target for the maximum productivity to happen? And I think that learning curve, if it doesn't happen, then irrespective of whatever investments we make, we may not see productivity, and therefore we may see people who are disappointed and leave the system. So the clarity on what can be made more productive is going to be the most critical talent at this point in time.
So this is where people carry automation. And I genuinely suspect that this person probably is auto-generating comments on LinkedIn, because I saw this comment of some person who's put a picture, you know, the sentence reads that, thank you, America, for the early Christmas gifts and, you know, and like very laudatory statements. And he stuck a picture of bombs, okay, stuck bombs. So it was actually sarcastic that, it was this whole Israeli Hamas thing. So somebody was just kind of making it this thing. So the guy, somebody has commented about it. Oh, this is such a great thing, and food is being supplied, and oh, early Christmas thing. I said, like, you know, like, there is no connectivity between what that guy is saying and that image, you know. So I'm just saying that to what you said, you know, so it has to be an intelligent mix of human and artificial intelligence. So obviously this is some auto-commenting thing on LinkedIn that this guy set up. He said, if you see a comment like this, just, you know, go for it. It was like, I was stunned, you know. Actually, I said, maybe I am not understanding. Maybe there is something wrapped in those bombs or something, you know, like, you know, rappers or something. Then I like enlarged it. No. It was actually a sarcastic comment and a commentary on whatever have you. But somebody's gone and just praised food aid and all to high heaven.
So if I had to kind of summarize the macroeconomics of AI, I think we agree that productivity growth will happen. While Sheetal, you mentioned, yes, you know, one has to pick and choose kind of which areas you would apply it. But productivity growth at a macro level will happen. Income inequality will go down. Both great points for, you know, AI and you know, usage of AI. But industrial concentration almost looks like, you know, we are divided, but we feel, two of us feel the concentration will increase. You know, with that kind of macroeconomic setting, let's quickly, I just quickly wanted to touch upon, because we mentioned about costs. So in the first section, I mentioned briefly that, you know, cost of training ChatGPT was 100 million. Keeping it up and running per day was 700,000. So you're talking of a kind of a $1 billion deal to run and work with a very large model. What are these costs? You know, without going into great details, it's basically going to be hardware, software, people, labor cost. And one cost which is going to really creep in is actually regulations, you know. So legal costs today, you know, and being coming from me and Samiran looking at the whole crypto and decentralized thing, you see what has happened to, you know, even Binance now, right? The exchange and stuff that is happening, the kind of regulatory fines and implications of regulations, the crypto world is experiencing it. And it took some time, right? I mean, it took some time from when Bitcoin started. I think those legal fees and regulatory are going to add to the cost of AI. Hardware, in my mind, the cost is very high today. So simply put, I mean, you are talking of GPUs primarily, which are used to train these models. CPUs can't. NVIDIA GPUs and the servers are extremely difficult to maintain. But in my mind, hardware cost, we have seen in past, will always tends to go down, right? So I have hope that probably hardware costs in, and it won't happen immediately, but in a decade's time, probably hardware costs are not going to escalate, but probably go down. Software and training cost is high, honestly, and labor cost is high. Again, they may go down in future. It happens, right? More talent, so labor, it has happened in software industry across the board. So costs today, simply put, costs are extremely high, right? But there is a chance, and some new costs will get added, but some of the costs like hardware probably will go down.
So in fact, on this cost thing, I just worry about allocation, and then I always go back to this Theranos thing, right? The fact that health tech, you know, it sucked in so much of health tech investment that a lot of other health tech people didn't get money because they said they had solved a problem, which, you know, was amazing. Like drop of blood, anything can be discovered. So a lot of other people didn't get money because they said, you know, what you're doing is crap. These guys are great. And the costs you talk about, right? I mean, so I read something about 770 employees of OpenAI. Somebody did a back of the envelope calculation and said, so the payroll must be 200 million. I was shocked. You know, that's the cost. When Anthropic went to take for some round of funding, so in conversation, they said the P, you know, so we are looking for about 500 investment. So that's, oh yeah, 500K, we are, that should be easy to come. He said, no, we are looking for $500 billion. So, you know, 500 million, sorry, not a billion, 500 million. So basically, the order of magnitude has changed so much. So my only worry is that I hope that we are just putting the money and not taking it away from somewhere else. I mean, other parts of technology or AI. I mean, that's the only worry. I mean, it's great and costs will come down, but you know, it's like all your eggs in the flavor of the month kind of thing.
So, from a cost perspective, I also I know we covered a part of this in our last episode, but we also need to be cognizant of the fact that there is a cost to the planet, which happens with all technology and AI in particular, right? So whether you talk about 14% of all global emissions in 2040 will be because of ICT industry, whether we realize it or not. I know we spoke about how much water gets used the last time, but think about it as, you know, University of Massachusetts put this out saying that training a large popular AI model can produce 626,000 pounds of carbon dioxide. That's equivalent to, and I'm not going to do cars because that's what men do. I'm going to call it the equivalent of 300 round flights between New York and San Francisco. Okay. So that's what their research talked about. And what we don't think about is the e-waste that comes out, right? Because of this. So the World Economic Forum says that by 2050, the total amount of e-waste generated will have surpassed about 120 million metric tons. So while everybody is talking about third world war kind of, you know, and we are seeing things happening in the world where wars are happening, I'm kind of saying that maybe the war is not required to kill us. AI only will kill us. So forget them taking away our jobs and forget all of that. Just enough to ruin the planet and not have, until and unless, like Samiran says, Musk would have gone, taken us to another planet.
I am putting all my eggs in his basket now because there's no other hope now.
then we can detox. But, you know, the cost is the cost of implementing, but the cost to the planet and the people is going to be, I think, very, very high.
So I think to summarize, I agree with you, Sheetal. I think the cost to the planet is high. And probably, you know, we did this whole Roti Kapda Aur Makan and we looked at each and every industry and we covered the cost of that industry on natural resources. And technology, honestly, even before AI, it has taken its toll on the natural resources and it is going to increase. Especially, it's like that whole Netscape moment of AI. Every person is at it, you know. I mean, it's stupidity that if one query of ChatGPT takes a bottle of water, supposedly, I mean, what kind of stupid queries people are might be asking to these LLMs is going to be crazy use of natural resources. So on that note, I think we'll kind of wrap up this episode of Cost and Economics of AI.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Techies Banter. Just wanted to say a big thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.